Good morning. Welcome as we shine the spotlight on collections today. Before we start, I have two pieces of housekeeping that I've been asked to take care of. First, in your tote bags, you received a blue card for a free CD from Archaeophone. The folks there tell me that not everyone has gotten theirs yet. They're going to close up at 3 o'clock today. So just a reminder, if you'd like your CD, please go pick it up today before 3 o'clock. The other request is that because we have some issues regarding fair use in some of the materials that will be presented today, I need to ask anyone who's taping not to do so. The rights will be cleared through ARSC, and if you can get the audio presentation through the ARSC CD, that's how we would ask you to do that. So thank you very much for your consideration there. Today we are putting the spotlight on collections. We'll hear how National Public Radio, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and the Chicago Jazz Archive deal with the challenge of managing large, living collections. First up, North America's two major non-commercial radio networks, NPR and the CBC. Find me some music that sounds like snow. We need one of those old Esso gasoline ads. Hannah Summers meets these and other demands on a daily basis. Hannah has been a librarian at NPR since 2004. She works in the audio archive, where she assists reporters and producers with audio research. And moreover, once the program is produced and aired, she indexes the finished audio for the archive. Just last week, she joined a team of developers to design the next generation audio production environment. Her role is to advocate for metadata collection from a moment the story is conceived and to design a new workflow for the archiving process. Lauren Shapiro is living proof that life happens while you're making other plans. He really does enjoy his job as media librarian at the music library of the CBC's English network at the Toronto Production Center. But he got his start cataloging, which was the last thing he ever intended to do. Lauren holds a bachelor's degree in music theory with a focus on early music and a master's degree in library and information studies, both from McGill University in Montreal. While finishing his library degree, Lauren started working as the music scores cataloger for McGill, and it only took a year and a half before the CBC lured him to Toronto and his current position. Lauren and Hannah will answer the nagging question, where did you find that? How NPR and the CBC audio collections support engaging, non-commercial radio programming on deadline. Please join me in welcoming Hannah and Lauren.
Thanks for coming to our presentation. Both Lauren and I were first-time attenders at ARSC last year, and we really appreciated the frank discussions about collections and challenges that all of you face in your libraries and your collections, and whether they're personal or institutional. So we wanted to add our voices to that conversation and give you a sense of what goes on in our sound collections. This presentation will not be terribly technical. It's more of a bird's eye view, but we'll try to answer any technical questions that you may have. So I will speak a little bit first about NPR and the kind of collections that we have, and then Lauren will talk about the CBC, and then we'll discuss some challenges that we face in common. So the purpose of our presentation is to engage your interest and support and share our challenges with you. So about NPR, I just wanted to establish a few facts about NPR before I discuss the collections that we have. I could just tell you the facts, but I thought a quiz would be more fun. So if you get any of these questions correct, you can stop up here and pick up a little window gel at the end of the presentation. It says NPR on it. So question number one, Lyndon Johnson signed the Public Broadcasting Act into law in what year? Question number two, how many stations does NPR own? Question number three, what percentage of NPR's annual budget is directly received from the federal government? This is multiple choice. 0%, 15, 40, or most of it. And question number four, why was there a coyote in the NPR archive? The answers to the questions, the Public Broadcasting Act was signed in, does anyone know? 1967, yes. And pursuant to it, NPR was established in 1970 and went on the air in 1971. The first broadcast of All Things Considered was heard 36 years ago yesterday on May 3rd. And the stories in that broadcast included coverage of Vietnam War protests in Washington, announcement of the Pulitzer Prize winners, an interview with a drug addict, a follow-up conversation between Allen Ginsberg and his father about the use of drugs, and a 30-minute one-year Kent State anniversary story. So 30 years ago, or 36 years ago rather, we heard stories about drug use, about violence on a college campus, and about protests against an unpopular war. Answer to question number two, NPR owns zero stations, yes. We produce radio programming and we distribute the programs of our member stations. We operate the satellite system for public radio, but we do not own any stations. We are supported by independent member stations who pay for our programs, and many of them are older than NPR itself. Question three, NPR receives $0 from the federal government directly. We can compete for funding through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting or other competitive grants, but we don't receive any money directly. And that federal money that we do receive competitively usually comprises only 2 or 3% of our annual budget. So I want to take you on a quick tour of our archives. There's our security desk at the front of the building. And here's our reference desk in the archive. A reference librarian is always on duty, and we have a little reenactment of a session with a patron here. We try to make everything as self-service possible in the archive, and here we have our business reporter, Jim Zaroli. That's the back of him. He's helping himself and doing a search of the collection, looking for, I think, one of his stories. And we try to make everything as self-service possible because often people are in a terrible rush, and if they can find it themselves, that's the best way to do things. We're always there to be backup and support and answer any difficult questions that people have, but we try to make everything easy to find and self-serve. This is Robert Goldstein, our music librarian. Yeah. He's on the phone helping somebody right now. I just want to mention quickly here that the archives staff are trained as librarians. Most of us have MLISs. Except Robert, his main qualification is his experience in the 80s new wave rock band, the Urban Verbs. The archive staff, the expertise that we bring to NPR is in facilitating access to the collections. We create metadata, we monitor transcript quality, we take calls from people looking for sound that's hard to find. We worry about the condition of the materials in the collection, and we coordinate with engineers and IT to implement sustainable practices. And we are skilled at working with people who are under so much deadline pressure that they can barely describe what they're looking for. Most of us have learned what we know about the technical aspects of audio on the job because we have to figure out how to get sound in one format to somebody who needs it in another format. And also we've learned from participating in meetings like ours. So Robert and a lot of music to go through behind him on the shelf, close up of that. When we catalog, when we index, and that goes for music as well as program segments, we do it down to the subject level. So each of the songs that are in our collection will be indexed at the song level, and for that reason, I mean, that's what we need when we're on deadline. We need a song that sounds like snow. We need a funny music about, you know, fruits or vegetables. But that's very time consuming. And so our cataloging backlog is pretty immense. And I think it was so comforting to me last year. We were at a session where at ARSC where someone asked how much of your collection is uncataloged. And you know, we raised our hands, 30%, 50%, 60%. And in our case, it's about half. And so it's important for Robert to know what's in those stacks. And he really does know, because only half of the collection is cataloged. This was kind of a coup. We scored NPR's second video dubbing station in the library a couple of weeks ago. And so that just helps people help themselves faster. A shot of our program collection. The most recent CDs are seen here. So programs air, and then they're output to CDR, and that's the format that they're being stored currently. We don't have a digital asset management system. One is starting to be designed, but right now we're outputting to CD, and we know that that is not a long-term solution, but it's what we are able to do with what we have in the short term. A glimpse of our cold storage collection, or our cold storage room.
The priorities. I will mention one special collection that we do have is the Clyde Gilmore collection. Clyde Gilmore, for those who don't know, was a host for, I think, 44 years? Anyway, just over 40 years, a particularly popular broadcaster, and his show ran, here it is, from 1956 to 1997, and his collection was donated in whole to the library on the stipulation that it remained a separate collection unto itself. Fortunately, we do have access to it, and there are a number of recordings, both vinyl and compact disc, that we do not have in our own collection, so it has been a very appreciated addition to our collection. We also have things like scripts from the show, notes. One of the nice things is that Clyde Gilmore actually put a lot of annotations on album covers, just you know, to indicate he would put newspaper clippings just to help him along when he was doing his show, and now whoever else is accessing this collection can have access to that information too. We do have a small reference collection of roughly 2,000 volumes, which the library staff actually makes more use of than do the users in this day and age. Most people just go on the internet to find what they need, and unfortunately, sometimes there are errors on air. We do use some magazines to try to keep up to date with upcoming releases for ordering purposes. Let's see what's next. Here's just another view. This is the jazz collection along this wall. Here you can see the popular CDs, classical LPs. We have a card catalog here because not all the LPs are on the database yet, and well, perhaps one day. So we rely on the good old card catalog to find those when we need to. And here's just one row of some of the vinyl, classical vinyl CDs that we have. Here is a look at our database. We have a simple and an advanced search. I find it a little bit cluttered myself, but our intent was to give a large number of access points for people to search things. I want to draw your attention to something here, the CanCon, that's the Canadian content box. A user can click that to limit their search to specifically Canadian content. Again, if someone's in a pinch and trying to find a Canadian artist doing a particular work, this is particularly helpful. So I've just done a little search. One thing I want to mention also is this drop-down menu here allows us to look across the entire country in different regions if we want to look to see what another library has if our library does not own it. I've done a search for a Montreal-based viola da gamba duo, Les Voix Humaines. I know they've performed the works of Saint-Coulomb recently and put out 4 discs of those works. I searched for this just to give you a little bit of an idea of what the Canadian, how the Canadian content will look if somebody's searching for it and how it's indicated. I've done my search and I get my results in this window here. Basically, RLMS is the Record Library Management System, which is the staff side of this database where we input the information. So pretty standard album title, the label, the number as given by the record company, when we acquired it, and our shelf number. Our shelf numbers are acquisition numbers, in other words, the order in which we acquire these things, which is useful for users because they can very readily go to the end of the shelf to see what the most recent things are that we've acquired. In the bottom window, we can get a little more information about the record that has come up. So there are a number of tabs on which a user can click. We have album, which will give you a little more album information. Things like release year, copyright year. It's a little bit faded, I realize, and hard to see, but you'll have to trust me on that. The next tab is cuts, basically what are the pieces contained on that album, who composed them, who's performing them, how long are those pieces, and here you can see the maple coding. This work and album is given an A and a P, indicating that the artists are Canadian and it was produced by a Canadian in Canada. Were Saint-Coulomb a Canadian composer, there would be an M there as well, and were there lyrics to this music, which there are not, there would be an L indicated as well. And you can see the CRTC code there, which is a 3 indicating classical music. And again, if we click on copies, we can see how many copies of the item we have in our library, indicated here, TOR for Toronto, as well as a number of libraries across the country in Quebec City, Moncton, Ottawa, Halifax, and Winnipeg. And you can also see the status, which is useful for producers when they want to see, A, if we have it, B, if it's on the shelf and you know they don't want to waste their time coming down to the library, if it's not even there, they can give us a call and recall a disc, actually. And again, just to get a little more information about a cut. Thank you. Okay, I'm running a little long, so I'm going to cut ahead a little bit because I want to just show you how it looks from the cataloger side of things. This is RLMS, the Record Library Management System. 3 sections, album title, label information, and again, shelf number. This record is created when we actually order the disc. And maybe not all of you are aware, but we do actually have to purchase, at this point, probably about 50% of the materials in the library. The other 50% are donations and promotional materials. And using the function keys, we can access the number of track listings. You'll see here there are 2 with the same name, it would seem. And what this is indicating is that there's a larger work, Retrouvé, and within that larger work, there are a number of movements, which we're calling excerpts here. And yeah, so that's just a little more detailed information. We can click another function key to get a little deeper inside the record. And that's more or less that part of it. At this point, we just kind of want to talk about some of the challenges we face. Sorry, there is one thing. I do want to back up to the transfer station, the slide of which you saw earlier, which what we do there is if we get a call from somebody across the country asking for a track that they don't have in their library, but that we can see they can see we have in our library, we basically dump that track into what's called Dalet, which is, it's a tool that I think, did you say you guys use it as well? Yeah, it's a production system that allows people to edit audio tracks and whatnot. And we have a shared folder for everybody available across the country from which they can access that. And so that's mainly what that transfer station is there for. Also to dump vinyl in and turn it into a usable file, as most of the studios in the CBC now do not actually have turntables, believe it or not. Okay, so now we're just gonna have a seat and talk about some of the issues that we are up against in trying to do our jobs.
Any questions? Are you taking
actually,
questions?
Just, I think maybe we just have maybe two or three more comments.
Oh, perfect. Okay, good.
There is one or two more slides, actually. This is a challenge that we recently discovered. Robert, again, our music librarian. We had a program called Performance Today, and it had been accumulating all of its production content and storing it in this room. We didn't know how much stuff was in this room.
And they're all dusty and old and kind of relics. What does that say about us? Anyway.
That's why we loved them.
Yeah, speak for myself.